This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, this hour here, Brock and Saul, gets brought to you by Precor Home Fitness, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com. Hope you check out the 710 Sports app. Really easy way to listen to the show and the station, whether it's live or later on demand. You can do all those things. The 710 Sports app. It is driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers. Brock, you had a pretty cool night last night.
I did. I got a little...
I was home sitting there with a headache trying to get over the horror of the how poorly we played golf together.
You're watching the Oakland A's win and just bash, and all of a sudden their Bash brothers are back, and there's 2.5 back of Seattle. I get it. I understand where you're coming from. You're sitting on a double bogey to scramble that I've never heard of. I mean, I've heard of bogeys at a scramble. I've never heard of a double bogey at a scramble. So you're sitting on some of that. I get it. And then all the while, I'm just having the time of my life. I'm driving over to Central League Field. Could have not been more beautiful, as it's going to be all week long. And getting a chance, as you know, one of my favorite things with my job on the college football end is talking to coaches. It's what I think I'd be doing if I wasn't doing this. I would, in some capacity, be a coach. And to get time with Ken Norton and Brian Schottenheimer and Brian Schneider to feel some of their excitement is they're back in the building getting ready for training camp. Yeah, got me a little juiced up. Not going to lie. And I got a bunch of fun takeaways.
Takeaways.
You wouldn't let me brag about the shape that John Ryan's in. Can I start takeaways with a punter?
Yes. If it's Michael Dixon, my favorite player in the Seahawks. My favorite Seahawks player, Michael Dixon, new punter, then yes, you can.
Without looking at the show sheet, Lydia, howdy, if you've not looked at the show sheet, how many different punts does Michael Dixon have at his disposal? And there's really a comparison here to pitches. It's like a pitcher that has how many different ways you can spin a baseball. Slider, curveball, fastball. Felix probably has the most pitches, right? I mean, doesn't Felix have like 5 or 6 real pitches in his arsenal?
Maybe Marco, purely. I don't know.
You think Marco has more pitches?
He utilizes more.
He's got 5
for
sure.
Like 3 pitches.
See, it doesn't count when Felix can't throw a fastball. It's hard to put him in there.
All right.
Well, you have to take that off the list of pitches he has because it's batting practice at best.
How many different legitimate punts, and I put Brian Schneider on the spot about this, how many different legitimate, because we've heard Clayton reference it, like, oh, he can do this with a football and that, and we're always like, come on. But how many different punts can he hit?
8.
Howdy?
5.
Salk? What would have been your guess?
My guess, knowing Michael Dixon,
yes,
would have been like 30.
Infinity?
Yeah. There's no limit to the number of punts.
Every punt is unique, Brock.
Legitimately 9 different punts he can hit. And I found the folks in the audience saw my mouth drop, and I saw all of theirs too. Like, come on, 9 different punts? What do you mean? Like right, left, center? No. No, like the way he kicks the ball differently. There's a Wild Bill.
What's the Wild Bill?
The Wild Bill is, I can't even tell you what it is.
He kicks it, and then it starts making noises as it goes
pretty
through
close.
The air, and it's so crazy it's difficult to catch. It hits the ground, and then it jumps again.
I imagine it like making all the different sounds from What Does the Fox Say? Like the punt goes up in the air and goes like, hotty, hotty, hotty ho, hotty, hotty, hotty ho. Like, is that what the punt does when it does the Wild Bill?
You think, Lydia, you could find what does the fox say?
What the fox say?
I don't know.
Say?
I mean, like, can we top that? I don't know. I'm like, Salk doing it.
I think it might be better. No, I think you can. He's got a boomerang. So a legitimate boomerang right or left. And the way that he hits it, he points one way, and then the ball will literally boomerang. He will boomerang. And,
so does that count as 1 or 2 punts?
No, boomerang right, boomerang left.
Doesn't sound very effective. It sounds like it would come back to the line of scrimmage.
No, it will go right, and
it sounds more like a draw or a little baby
a draw
fade.
Fade.
A massive draw or hook and a massive slicer fade.
Okay.
And a legitimate boomerang.
Here we go. This is going to have to be his official punting song of the year.
What does Wild Bill say?
Every time he punts, man, the wild bill. Yeah, this is my favorite one.
Hotty-ho,
hotty, hotty, hotty-ho.
There's not that many times I can legitimately picture the audience out there, really, because I'm trying to focus on you. But I'm legitimately picturing moms and dads and sitters driving kids around right now, and the kids in the back seat doing that. Like, what was that?
Well, they all know it already.
No, they don't.
Yes, they do.
This is what you get, Brock, for bringing punter takeaways. This is the problem.
It has been years.
I'm more excited about Michael Dixon than any player on the Seahawks. No joke. And if I wasn't making the list of the most intriguing for everybody, and if I was making it just for me instead of for everybody, he would have been number one on my list.
You and I
grew up. He would have been number one through 12.
All five of
us. One for each one of his many punts.
All five of us all grew up doing the same thing. Baseball, throwing a ball to somebody. Basketball, passing the ball to somebody. For those who played football, throwing the ball to one another. He grew up kicking the ball to somebody. That's what he did. It was more common for him to kick the ball to somebody else. So what he can do directionally, what he can do with spin. The Wild Bill is like a pancake. It lays flat. Instead of point down, which you see a lot of punters do, with the ball pointed down, and they kind of kick it up, and John Ryan does a bunch of it. It's the same thing, but he does it dead flat.
It's a knuckleball.
Yeah, so it just spins. It's like a UFO. And if there's wind in that stadium, you're not catching that UFO. Right? I mean, it is the amount of funk that he was going to bring to that game, to that unit.
All right, we've got
to
stop
talking.
Compete
with John Ryan. We've got to
stop talking
too
much. As much as I'm excited of all this.
All right.
How many of your kids like What the Fox Say? 710-710, powered by Coors Light. What's next?
Takeaways.
Yeah, Shotty was talking about the similarities between Russ and Pete. And we've said this before, but it was neat hearing it from somebody that's new to the situation. And he's like, it's amazing. They are the same. Their brain works exactly the same way. And this isn't Shoddy's words, this is mine, but they're probably borderline ADD. I mean, legitimately, when you talk to people that have worked around them, been around them, teammates with them, Russell, the reason he has the Portland baseball team, he has Trace Me, he has Eat the Ball, he has every brand imagine, he needs it. Like, he can't sit still. He's got to go. Go, 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 go. From 5 a.m. till midnight, right? What did he tell us? 4 hours sleep? He's got to go. Pete Carroll? He's got to go. From 5 a.m. to midnight, he's got to go.
Yeah.
And Shotty was like, it's hilarious because, you know, Russell, and they talk similarly. Russell would be like, hey, Shotty, look at this play right here. Put on the Giants game of 4 or 5 years ago. What do you think about this? Can we go double move here? And same thing. And then Pete will walk in the room and be like, hey, I got a thought for you. What do you guys think about this? And just the back and the forth with those two guys, that as much maybe on the surface level, we've talked about it from the depth level, from someone new to the situation, it is remarkable how lockstep those two guys are. And that is something I don't think we've appreciated.
Yeah, it's probably similar to the whole Jerry Scott thing that we've talked about with the Mariners. When you get those people in those spots on the same page, that's usually pretty good news. Now Pete just got to get on the same page with, you know, the rest of the team in addition to Russell.
Sure, but you better have that relationship, right? And a lot of places don't.
Sure.
A lot of places have real friction. I mean, even the greatest quarterback going on, you know, of all time right now has a little bit of a friction point. They've made it work, obviously. You don't have to be birds of a feather to fly together, but they are. And it was pretty neat to hear it from that perspective.
Takeaways.
This run game that we have talked about, that's been written about, that Brady Henderson wrote a great piece upon, is going to have more variety, thank goodness, than it's ever had. If it got a little feisty last night at any point at the end of this cool little get-together, an old-timer stood up and said, can I say something? And he looked like right as Shotty. He's like, how are we going to fix this run game? And Shotty was great. You know, instead of like, oh, I don't know, we're going to do this, we're going to keep working at it. He's like, we are going to throw more at it than ever been thrown at it. And there's going to be games, and you have to do this. And I think there was such a steadfastness to the way they did it in the past. We're going to run outside zone. It's what we've done. It's who we are, period, end of story. And you're going to see just a lot more variety. And that has to be, I think, refreshing to your guys' ears out there. And I know talk is cheap, and you're going to want to see it. But with three different backs who are all pretty dynamic guys, you're going to see outside zone and inside zone. You're going to see sprint draw. You're going to see power. You're going to see ISO. You're going to see fullbacks. You're going to see more variety in that run game. And I'll raise my hand. That is going to be a welcome sight.
Yeah, I'm with the old-timer, and so is everybody else out there.
Fix it.
Well, it starts, to be fair, it starts with, like, remembering it exists. That was Bevel's problem. I mean, you have issues with Cable, who couldn't figure out how to block anything. You had issues with an offensive line. That
no, the issue,
squad.
I think...
And then Daryl Bevel forgot that he was supposed to use it.
That's your opinion. The issue,
yeah,
football perspective-wise, is this little line that you walk between this is a conviction and who we are, which is awesome, which got us to two Super Bowls. This is who we are. And I'm not going to be, I'm not going to minor in 10 things. I'm going to major in one. And with Marshawn and Russell, it was pretty darn good philosophy.
Yeah.
But in 25, 15 and 16 and 17, with no Marshawn and no continuity, you better be able to minor and major in a few different things.
I don't think so. I think Daryl Bevel always wanted to have a throwing offense, and he was able to be kept in check for a while because of Marshawn Lynch, and he actually ran the ball more than he probably wanted to. And the moment that that went away, he felt his britches.
You don't think Daryl Bevel, in his heart of hearts, wanted to run the ball so he could actually pass protect?
I don't.
Okay. Well, we have a fundamental disagreement.
Because the moment he started to have success running the ball, he couldn't have been more overjoyed to start throwing it.
The greatest running years in the history of this organization were with Daryl Bevel and Tom Cable leading it. They were. And unfortunately, when the running back disappeared...
I think there's people who would argue that's not true.
All right.
That the biggest years were not during that group. It was with Toback and Sean Alexander and the rest of those
speaking,
guys.
They ran a whole lot better than even
regardless,
those
I'm not arguing. I think that he was brought begrudgingly to that. I think at the end of the day, Daryl Bevel wanted to throw the ball.
I think Daryl Bevel wanted to run it in play action and move it, and unfortunately could not do any of it. And when it was just as horrific a run game as it was last year, good luck.
Takeaways.
So we'll see that one a little differently.
Yeah, I think we will.
Unfortunately, the rest of the league sides more with you because they're never shown.
Look, maybe he was just so incompetent that he couldn't figure out how to design a running scheme that didn't involve Marshawn Lynch. I don't know. But maybe that's why he had to throw the ball, because he literally lacked the scheme to figure out how to run it effectively.
Yep.
But for whatever reason, he was the wrong guy. Whatever. He's gone. Thank God.
You ready? Three more quick ones?
Yes.
The easiest way. How are these guys going to differentiate?
You knew I was in a bad mood and you brought up Daryl Bevel.
I'm sorry.
What's the matter with you?
My bad.
Sheesh.
The easiest way for any of these running backs to differentiate themselves.
Are you talking about Paul O'Neill next? Oh, my God.
Sorry. Go ahead. Now we're going to talk about the NBA next. Some of the hottest storylines.
Can't wait. Give me hot takes galore.
How are these running backs going to differentiate themselves? It's going to be hard to do in training camp. You don't have live tackling. You don't have it. You've only got how many snaps in preseason games? How many of them are going to be against number one units for Indianapolis and Minnesota that you can really judge? I think over the course of the next month, one of the ways you're going to separate yourself, if you're Rashad Penny, if you're CJ Procise or Chris Carson, is how do you pick up this scheme and how do you protect?
Mm.
You know, Schottenheimer's point on that, which was a good one last night, and I made it a few different times, it's not just the five uglies up front. It is your tight end, Ed Dixon, who, by the way, one of the top pass-protecting tight ends in all the NFL, based on Pro Football Focus's grades. And it's your running back. And it's not five, it's seven. Or it's 6.5, and that guy's checking on his way out. But those guys' ability to pass block and to understand this system, Rashad Penny, if you're going to make waves and you're really going to be the guy, and you have got to climb that learning curve really fast.
Takeaways.
I learned a little something last night, which I always enjoy doing football-wise. I learned, number one, that Brian Schottenheimer, and I should have known this, loved Steve Spurrier. That was his coach in college, was part of the 96 national title team in Florida. Loved him and said he was the greatest play caller.
Hope he's got a better work...
work capacity?
Yeah.
I think in those days,
better
ball
work
coach
commitment.
He was still working. The biggest influence on Brian Schottenheimer in his entire career, save his dad, because Marty Ball is going to be the biggest influence by far, his dad, who was known to run the football. The biggest influence in his, the biggest imprint that anybody made on Brian Schottenheimer, he's been a lot of places with a lot of people, was Mike McCarthy. And I think that's great news for Seahawk fans. I've not really heard that story told, and he's been around many, you know, and you can go look at his resume, and he's learned from a lot of people. But sitting under Mike McCarthy, from his perspective, was probably the biggest imprint on how to build an entire offense. Right? A guy that the majors in the details of things, has an understanding of how you build and how you put pieces together. You don't just run these plays. These are building blocks to do this, to do X, Y, and Z. And from his perspective, Mike McCarthy, one of the best at it. And Mike McCarthy's track record of everywhere he's been and who he has worked with is also pretty sky high.
Yeah, I would say that that's a pretty good name to be associated with, right?
Yes, and I didn't realize...
Although, two guys I really... Spurrier and McCarthy, two guys I associate with throwing the ball over the yard.
Next. I'm not going to go back to that. I'm not going to put you in that mood.
It's just interesting.
We're good.
Don't you think
good.
That's interesting?
Sure, we're good, though. I'm not even going to go there. I'm not even going to touch that run.
Fine.
We're doing bubble. I think he's too hot today.
A lot of text messages on Bevel.
He's too hot.
Bevel was fired 6 months ago. Why the continued cheap shots?
Yeah.
They're not cheap.
Seriously.
They're the same things I said when he was here.
They're just shots, 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 shots.
And that would be, by the way.
Bevel always bombed it all the way back to Minnesota. I think Brock is fundamentally wrong on this one.
What does Mike Salk say? Shot, 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 shot. What does Mike Salk say?
My best part of that song is what the duck says, which is ducks say quack, apparently, in Denmark or wherever they're from. I think they're from Denmark. Doesn't that always blow your mind when other cultures have a different word for what animals say?
Yeah, strange.
How can ducks say quack? Don't they say quack?
Yeah.
Shocking.
Still wanting to go back. I mean, we've moved on to a new song, to a new takeaway.
Ducks that quack.
All right, last one. I was hoping we'd see a lot more hitting in camp. I was like, hey, Norton, you know, I got them all. I tried my best last night. Like, you and Bobby Wagner in your prime. Bobby right now in his prime. You guys go like head on the tackling drill. What's that look like? He didn't want to touch that or go there. So, okay, well, tell me. You're going to be more hitting? Like, we're going to get some live tackling in training camp?
No.
A lot of fresh blood?
No.
A lot of young legs, right? A lot of decisions got to be made. Tell me we're going to get some live tackling, some goal line, short yardage. Actually, no. We're not going to do any of that. That's not our belief. That's not what we teach. We're not going to do any of it. We're going to see it in games, which, by the way, are coming in, 16 days? Good. 2 weeks from Thursday, right. Preseason game number one.
Those are Brock's takeaways from yesterday. Sounds like a really cool event with all three coordinators. Let me ask you guys a question. I'll open this up. 206-421-3776. What will be the biggest difference between last year's Seahawks and this year's team? What will be the biggest difference? You can go something you're going to see on the field, an attitude. You could go with a record. I mean, what will be the running game, the coordinating, the pass rush, the differences in the Legion of Boom, the distraction level, the buy-in to Pete Carroll system? You could, I mean, there's like a gazillion potential answers to this.
Wow.
What will be the single biggest difference between the 2017 Seahawks and this 2018 version? 206-421-3776. What do you think will be the single biggest difference?
Something that you're going to see or you want to see or you want to feel?
I didn't say that. What do you think will be the single biggest difference between last year and this year?
The hunger.
So you think it's an emotional difference?
I think it will be the collective hunger of this group.
Hmm.
And I think it has to be. I think we will feel that. I think we will sense it. I think there will be some newness. I think there will be some fear. I think there will be just the whole gamut of emotions. But if you ask me point blank, when Kurt Menefee and I get in that booth 2 weeks from Thursday already for the first preseason game, and you and I are out there Thursday, and it'll be a little harder practice. It's always harder to, you know, to ramp it to 100 in practice at training camp. But ultimately, when we tune in 2 weeks and watch that first preseason game, and we watch this preseason in totality, I think it is just going to be that hunger, just that hunger to compete and that desire to do it, man. I think in years past, and over the last couple of years, there's just been, you know, some of the veterans that just, I've been there, I've done it. I want to put my ball cap on and let's just get to Sunday. Let me just make my plays and do my thing on Sunday. I think the collective hunger is something that we will feel is the biggest difference.
I certainly hope that that will be a difference. It would surprise me if that is the biggest difference that we're able to see this year in the Seahawks. I'm not saying you're wrong. That's not where my mind goes. I think it matters and Pete sort of regaining control. But while you still have the Earl Thomas situation out there, while Frank Clark is going to do whatever he's going to do, I don't know. It doesn't
resonate.
Not enough for me. Okay. I'm not saying you're wrong.
I would take the three running backs and how hard you're going to see all of them run and not be doing D-line drills and not be wearing some goofy hat like Kristen Michael and not be just out with any number of myriad of every soft tissue injury as CJ Procise has had. You're going to see a hunger to do it. The tight end group that's got new pieces and a young rookie that wants to block and an old veteran that wants to block and an O-line that just, I think, collectively is so sick and stinking tired of hearing how terrible they are.
Yeah.
And Ethan Posick and Dwayne Brown, who can legitimately do something about it. A legitimate hunger of 9 different receivers, 3 through 9 that's wide open to prove they can make this team. Some corners and some safeties and some linebackers that can't wait to hit. And, you know, your guy in the middle that is never tired and always hungry in Bobby Wagner. I think there's going to be a collective hunger that we've not necessarily felt.
Well, if there's one thing I can understand, it's always being hungry.
Yeah.
So I am on board for that. However, I don't know. 206-421-3776. I hear some of you guys' answers. What will be the single biggest difference between last year's Seahawks and this team that we're going to see starting on Thursday? Start off with Pat, who's calling from Seattle. Pat, what do you think? What will be the biggest difference?
I've got a couple things. I think the biggest difference is there could be less noise. And I think, you know, like Brock was saying, Pete regaining control of the message and making sure that that message resonates, hopefully translates into them playing with that same unity and swagger that we saw early on. And then the other thing is, I was at an event last night that Brock was at and listened to Brian Schottenheimer a little bit. I think he's going to bring a different dynamic to this offense, and I think he's going to use the running back weapons in a different way than we've seen them use, and I think that could be a game changer as well.
So, Paul, I got a quick question for you then. We didn't get too much into Earl last night, but if there's going to be less noise, how do you want to see Pete handle this in 48 hours? Depending on what you believe Earl Thomas is going to do, and you want less noise out of this, how do you want Pete and program to handle some of the Earl Thomas could-be distraction?
I think it's a really difficult, tricky situation. I think that after the initial he's not showing up, because I firmly believe he's not going to show up, I think they're going to have to wait him out and move on to whatever's in front of them and take that Bill Belichick attitude. We're dealing with who's here, what's in front of us, and we're not going to deal with what's not here. And until he shows up and buys in, that's it.
I'm not buying it. I'm not buying it, Pat. I love it, and I hope you're right. I'm not buying it.
What does Salk say?
I'm just not buying it. I'm not. I just think
what
that
does Mike Salk say?
I think the noise that will be coming from San Francisco is going to completely overshadow any ability to try to make the noise stop here.
Sure.
That Richard Sherman is not done laying his hooks into the Seahawks. That
remember, this was Salk from Jurassic Park.
What is that?
The dinosaur that just sort of like rears its head. Oh, yeah.
You just have that ready to go at any moment? That's like a drop in our system?
Yeah, absolutely.
In case what? Groz is nose breathing again? Like we're ready? What is that?
It's definitely labeled with your name on
or
it.
Or you're spitting fire? Yes, every once in a while you're ready.
Right, apparently.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know that they're going to be able to contain that noise. Not when Earl Thomas's situation is unresolved and not while Richard Sherman is instigating from San Francisco. I just feel like I would bet money on there being some sort of a nasty article coming out about this locker.
But don't you also feel like instead of having to duck it and fake it, because we all know things which weren't right on the inside at times, that it's a whole lot more solid and Pete doesn't have to do that?
Mm.
I don't think Pete is in a position that he's got to do that. Those guys aren't going to be playing for him. All of those guys that did so much work for him and helped him win a world championship, they're not there. So I think that empowers Pete to be stronger than he's ever been with his word.
Pete has always been empowered to be as strong as he needs to be. He just needs to actually back it up. When Richard, he's not going to do that. That's not how Pete's wired. He is not wired to throw an elbow at Richard Sherman, metaphorically.
Right.
That's not how he's wired. He's wired to do whatever he's going to do behind the scenes and in public, cover for his guys. And by the way, a lot of great coaches and managers do that. I'm not criticizing Pete for that. That seems to be the way to win in today's day and age. But I don't see him like silencing any opinion for this locker room. If anything, I think he encourages that kind of thing. So I don't know. I love that you guys get your own opinion. That's awesome. I don't personally think that's going to be the thing that will be most different this year. What else you guys say? We got, five lines full, one line empty, 206-421-3776. What will be the single biggest difference between last year's Seahawks team and this one? A lot of places you can go with this. We'll dig in a little further next. I'm Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
206-421-3776. What is the biggest difference, or what will be the biggest difference between the Seahawks last year and this year? This hour brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. Grab Andrew, who's in Seattle. Andrew, what will be the biggest difference from last year to this?
Well, I think the biggest difference will be just the uncertainty everybody's going to feel until the end of the year. I mean, you have a new offensive coordinator, a new defensive coordinator, new pieces on the defense. And I just think that until the end of the year, when you see how everything shapes up, nobody's going to really know. And that kind of extends to how they're going to do with the other teams in the division. I mean, they, you know, the 49ers have their quarterback and a great offensive coordinator pieces. I just think that it's a real time of uncertainty that we're just not going to know until it all shakes out what the team is going to look like and how they're going to be in comparison with the other team.
I think that's a really good answer. I mean, when is the last time you kind of went into a season with as much up in the air as you have this year? I mean, for the last 5 years, you've just sort of known that the Seahawks are going to be good. They're going to win at least 10 games, and we'll see what they do after that. It's sort of been the what you've gone into every season with.
Yeah, the last time was 2012.
This year feels different from that.
2012. You were 7-9, you were 7-9. You were 7-9 in the playoff team with Matt Hasselbeck, and then you were 7-9 with T-Jack, and you had some nice pieces, and you know, you liked Richard Sherman, you liked Cam, and you know, they kind of found their footing in year two there and found a role. You're like, man, this thing could be good, but I don't know who the quarterback's going to be. And this Matt Flynn guy is, you know, a very popular choice. And then this little quarterback we drafted in the third round, as far as uncertainty goes, it was the 2012 season. That was the last time you had this much.
I think that's a really good answer and definitely something that will be different for fans for sure. I don't know if that'll be true as much for the team themselves, but for the fans, I think a level of uncertainty that we can't remember here for quite some time. My answer, Brock, we'll get back to the calls in a sec, 206-421-3776. My answer is the offensive identity, and that encompasses a bunch of the moves they made this offseason, but it should be a return to the offense that Pete Carroll has said he wanted. Run the ball and then take big shots and play action. I'm not saying be a run-first offense or an exclusively run offense or anything like that, but play physical downhill football to set up the big play potential of Russell Wilson. And everything they did this offseason was designed to take advantage of that. They got rid of Daryl Bevell and brought in Schottenheimer, and as you said, a more creative vision for an offensive running plan, and then also the ability to take advantage of Russell in some different ways. You change out your offensive line coach, ding dong again, the witch is dead apparently on Tom Cable, and bring in somebody with some different vision on how to develop a run and pass blocking scheme that doesn't lead to your line being last in like every single category. Bring in Ed Dixon and Will Disley, two blocking first tight ends, to replace Jimmy Graham, who was a wide receiver somehow playing on the line, and Luke Wilson, who wasn't too far behind him. I mean, everything they did was designed to take advantage of what they say their identity is. Run the ball and then take big plays and play action. And that means you're going to need really big stuff from Tyler Lockett. It means you're going to need some big play potential from whether it's Jaron Brown,
Marcus Johnson.
One of these guys, but they brought in some players that they think have big play potential on the outside, even if not they're not the perfect, you know, do everything type of wide receiver. Great, you got Doug Baldwin to do everything.
Yep.
And those guys are going to need to be deep, big play threats.
Yep.
And so when I look at the biggest differences from a positive perspective, I think it's going to be a major change in your offensive identity. The defensive changes, that's where I'm more concerned.
Yep.
That's where all of my hesitancy and concern about the Seahawks, it all stems from the defensive side of the ball and just whether or not they can generate enough pressure on the quarterback. Because I think that's the other thing that is going to change, is the days of the quarterback needing to take those real quick, short routes all the time against you, those may end. If they don't respect your pass rush, they don't respect your secondary the way they once did, and all of a sudden they're taking deeper drops and able to do a little bit more. Now, here's the positive on that. Maybe you can actually get a turnover now and again, because it seems like every team every year for the last four or five has just been about making sure the Seahawks don't take the ball away from you.
Yep.
And maybe you'll get them a little bit more sense of security, and the other offenses will try to take more chances and you can pick the ball.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. My concerns are much more on the defensive side of the ball.
Which is so crazy with a Pete Carroll team, but can you rush the passer? Can you make
the stops
you need to in the secondary? Yep. 206-421-3776. What will be the biggest difference with your Seahawks this year? Brock said it would be
the collective hunger that you are going to feel from this team.
And I'll say it'll be back to the change in the offensive identity. Let's grab Adam, who's in Seattle. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning. Yeah, the biggest difference is going to be the running game, and it's Rashard Penny. He may not be the week one starter. Chris Carson will probably be the starter. But we drafted him in the first round for a reason. And I think he'll lead all the running backs in touches, yards, and touchdowns. And the thing that Penny has over Chris Carson in pro size is his durability. So my answer is the impact of Rashard Penny, and I think our running game is going to look good this year.
Well, I sure hope so, and he's going to get every opportunity to do it. I'll tell you this. There's some new names Okay, there's going to be some new names and some new challenges for a lot of us. Rashim Green is going to be a challenge. Rashad Penny, not Rashard Penny. We're going to have to get to know some new names. There's this for the first time come Thursday.
You got Jaron Reed and Jerron Brown.
Yes.
But don't worry. Just John listen Brown. Between 10 and 12 and you'll get that all set. 206-421-3776. Grab Brad, who's in Oak Harbor. Good morning, Brad.
Good morning. Actually, I'm curious about two different things. So first off, who's going to take up the leadership role, both offensively and defensively. I'm curious about that, who's going to step up. But I'm most excited about the offensive identity. I think, see how Schottenheimer really differs from Bevel. I've always liked Schottenheimer as an offensive coordinator, and I think he might really bring a lot of excitement and help Russell expand his game.
Well, I'll tell you this, my friend. There's clearly the offensive voices, excuse me, I think set in stone. I think that's going to be Doug. I think that's going to be Russ. And I think you're going to hear and feel more Dwayne Brown. Hmm. And you have to. I mean, you gave up an awful lot. As we're sitting here talking about Earl Thomas and can you get a third or a fourth, remember what you traded for Dwayne Brown. You know, a left tackle at a premium position and a supply that, unlike safety, is pretty diminished. There is a lot more safeties out there than left tackles. I understand that. But you gave up quite a bit, second and third, as you're trying to peddle Earl Thomas off. So I think those are the voices offensively. And defensively, there's no question it's Bobby Wagner. Bobby, KJ is going to continue to be, I think, a leader. You may hear some of his voice grow.
Those are some differences for sure. I mean, no more Richard Sherman, Cam Chancellor, being the ones to,
Michael Bennett,
to comment every single week. Nope. And Bobby Wagner is going to need to step up and be one of the true voices of this team. 206-421-3776. Grab Isaiah, who's in Yakima, one of our favorites. What's up, Isaiah? Good morning.
Morning, guys. How you been?
Good, dude.
Good. I think one of the biggest and most intriguing things for me coming into this year is going to be whether or not they're going to carry a true fullback. In years past, when Marshawn was doing his thing, we had a true fullback that was helping lead the way, along with the good offensive line. And I think that's one of the most biggest points that I'm looking for this offseason.
So. Look, man, I love the answer, and I think that can be a difference. The biggest difference, you can't say that's going to be the biggest difference for the Seahawks, though, right?
I mean, for the offensive standpoint, obviously the biggest thing is the elephant in the room. Are they going to give Dwayne Brown his contract extension? What are they going to do with Earl? But, I mean, for the whole thing of they want to get back to the basics, they want to get back to who they were, their identity of running the football, another thing they need to address is going to be that fullback position.
I think that's a great way of looking at it. Essentially, Isaiah and I saying the same thing, that the moves they've made this offseason are designed to help them get back to who they are. I don't know whether the fullback itself is, like, the number one biggest difference
you'll see. Rumor is they're signing Sam Gash.
Really?
Just for the neck roll.
Dude, you bring back Sam Gash and his neck roll, then good luck.
You put a neck roll, an old-school neck roll on any of these fullbacks, that'll be my favorite. I don't care who it is. It could be the 90th guy on the roster. Put that just old school, the white roll with the little thing, the little V coming.
Bring in Maurice Carthon. Oh. Let that guy block. I'm all in. 206-421-3776. Grab one more real quick. How about Jake in White Center? Jake, what's up?
Hey, what's up, guys? I hope the biggest change this next year, I hope we can stay on schedule.
Mm. I mean, fewer penalties? Fewer negative plays?
Definitely that, but I'm so sick and tired of 1st and 10, handoff, loss of 1 or 2.
Yep.
I'd like to see us average 3 or 4 yards a carry. It's not going to happen every time, but that way we can be less predictable, I should say.
I got to ask you a question, though, Jake. I'm only cutting you off because we're up against the clock, so let me just ask you a quick question. That's what you want to be the biggest difference. Do you believe it will be?
I think so. With the new line coach, hopefully we can get some good trap plays in there, some good power plays, some ISOs.
Yeah, Jake, I'm with you. The number of 2nd and 13s last year and 2nd and 15s. Thank you, brother.
What about 1st and 15? Yeah. Where does that go?
Yeah, that too.
List? Don't forget 1st and 15. Oh. Don't forget, on first down we gained 7. On second down we lost 5.
What's the worst blackjack hand that can be tipped 16 over?
16 against the 10.
No, I'm talking about the first two cards. What are the first two cards when they get thrown in front of your line?
10 and a 6.
Oh, gosh.
Can't be worse. Oh. Can't be worse than 10
and a
6.
How about a 2 and a 5? How about a 2 and a 3?
You can still work on that.
Oh, gosh.
It's a ton of work. What do you mean?
What's
wrong with that?
2nd and 13, 2nd and 12. second and 16, just untenable, just absolutely untenable, which was way too many times
first,
last year.
First and 15 is still the one that continues to get me. Oh, look, Darryl forgot to call the play in time in the huddle, so Russell wasn't able to get them to the line of scrimmage on first down coming out of a timeout, and then they had to blow 5 yards again. Smooth move, Darryl. Way to go, DB. Oh. Sorry you couldn't think of a play, but maybe today. All right.
Oh, fine. You're aggravating with that.
He's really annoying to me, man. He is one real irritating coordinator. I couldn't be happier that he is no longer with this team. All right. Here's what we got. Tickets to give away here in a couple of minutes if you want to go see the Mariners. And who's this game against? I'm not sure. It's August 19th. Mariner game with a party including D. Gordon. You get to go meet D as part of the whole thing. You'll be like David Freitas' kid. Upon getting to go, we'll play you that. It'll make it all make sense. That's coming up in a few minutes, along with Good News, Bad News, No News next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Good news. Yeah! Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
All right, tickets to give away. Coming up here in about 5-6 minutes. Get you guys to a Mariners game on August 19th against Houston. Pre-game party in the pen with D. Gordon. Pretty sweet deal. We'll do that coming up in just a couple minutes right after the news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
James Paxton and his stash take the mound tonight to start a two-game series versus the San Francisco Giants.
Well, that is great news. You're going to need James Paxton here in the second half in big-time ways. It was great that Wade LeBlanc was the first one out the gate to begin the second half and absolutely fooled the White Sox in 10 strikeouts. And Marco continues to be, can you say it, the ace of the staff? Consistency-wise, I know confidence-wise, every time he takes them out, I certainly feel that way. But Paxton, that stash, they're going to need him in the second half, and that begins tonight against the Giants.
James Paxton is still the ace of this staff. And I think the fact that you saw him at the end there when he was obviously having some issues with his back, he was not the same James Paxton, right? I think this is good news. The fact that he is healthy enough to come off the DL as expected, got his rest that he probably needed in the middle of this season. I'm expecting real deal James Paxton starting tonight. Expect him to blow away the Giants.
You into the stash? I mean, more importantly.
Goodness.
I was ignoring the stash.
Oh, come on. I wonder if it'll make it easier for Ichiro to disguise himself if everybody's wearing a mustache.
I just can't wait for the glasses and mustaches in the maple grove. We're putting a mustache on the maple tree out
there.
Well,
now I don't like your tone,
great.
So we'll just go to the
I'll tell you
one.
What, sorry, just strike some people out and don't get shelled like you did in your last outing.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Sorry, Jeff Passan is reporting that the Royals have interest in Mariners first baseman Ryan Healy.
I'm going to call this no news. I don't know that that means anything. The Mariners, there's no report that the Mariners have any interest in trading Ryan Healy. I'm sure the Royals looked around and said, hey, if you're bringing Cano back and he's going to play some first base, maybe that's going to be a long-term fit for him. Would you have any interest in dealing Ryan Healy? My guess is that Jerry DePoto said, hey, thanks for calling. This might be a conversation we should revisit in the offseason. Good to know you're interested, but I'm not sure that's a move I can make mid-year, given the way our clubhouse has been built and how important that seems to have been for a team with basically a negative run differential that somehow is 20 games over 500. So, hey, thanks for the phone call. Really appreciate it. Not opposed to a reopening, that sort of negotiation maybe in the offseason, but for now, probably not something.
You know what? I'm going to just say yes. That's the best 45 seconds you've had this morning on the show,
right.
And I would agree
nice.
With all
of
that.
All right. I sang What the Fox Says.
Good news, bad news, no news.
Backup catcher David Freitas has been sent down to AAA Tacoma on Father's Day, his birthday, and it's now Family Day. And his family likes to respond and, you know, by doing fun things together, including most recently the Shiggy Challenge. But I also love this. He did make time to get his son, his young son, a D. Gordon bobblehead.
Can you? What did Daddy get you?
Uncle D. Bobblehead?
Uncle D. Bobblehead?
Yeah, I told you.
Do you love it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what's inside it?
You want to play with it? Okay.
What's inside it?
Uncle D.
Oh, my God.
What, can you explain to people what the Shiggy Challenge is? I don't know that 100% of our listening audience is fully aware
of the Shiggy
Challenge.
Well, have you ever danced to the Shiggy? Have you ever danced to the Shiggy?
Brock, that was close.
I'm asking for an explanation. For those people that don't know what the Shiggy Challenge is, what is it?
So it is a dance to the song In My Feelings by Drake.
Mm.
It's to the chorus. It's really easy. But the In My Feelings challenge is like you play the song, you jump out of a car that's slowly moving, and you just start dancing as the car's in neutral.
Okay.
But he made like the specific dance for
and
it.
And who is he?
His name is Shiggy.
But who is he?
I don't know. That's it.
He's not part of the song?
He's
no.
Shiggy.
No.
Is he the guy that big time Russell at the ESPYs and move Russell out of the way to take the picture with Sierra? Oh, that was him.
He said, move out the way.
So he's just a guy who dances to someone else's song?
Sure.
Yeah, and Shiggy. He just became famous because of it.
Can I hear that song? Because it's a pretty good little song.
I got to go. I'm sorry. I can't keep. I'm out. Why do we even do this job? Why does anybody do anything anymore if all you have to do is jump out of a car and dance to someone else's song?
But this is just like baseball, Mike. It's specialization.
I'm out.
This is a lefty specialist.
I'm out.
He comes in and he specializes in making a nice dance for somebody's nice song.
I at least thought that it was his song.
And then this guy's dancing.
I love Brock's version.
Like that?
You hear how nice this song
is? I'll tell you what I love. I love Freitas' version. And I love Freitas' wife.
She was awesome.
She is awesome.
That video was awesome. That put me in a great mood yesterday.
Yeah, she seems fun. She seems like exactly what you need if you're going to be on the bubble of a 25-man roster.
You better be able to laugh at it being sent down three times.
Exactly.
Oh, he's feeling it. Oh, he's feeling himself. Oh, no. This just went from PG to PG-13.
Well, that's when Freitas whips off his shirt.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Pig farmer right there, that's man. Right. He's got a little game.
Text message.
Good news, bad news.
I wish
no
I could
news.
Jump out of the car while Salk is talking. You can. I mean, geez, I don't know. If that's how you feel about things. It's not very
sad.
Nice. We done?
Yeah, that's it.
We got to give away these tickets. Yes. Too bad. We got like 10 other things we could throw in here. All right. Sorry, Shiggy distracted us. All right, let's give away these tickets. Fourth caller. You know what? Just to torture you guys, I had to make it like the 50th caller just because you guys are being jerks back there. But we'll say the fourth caller.
That would actually be harder for us.
That's my point. That's who I was talking to.
Oh, you're okay.
Yes, I was talking to the three of you clowns in there. Fourth caller at 206-421-3776 is going to win four tickets.
You are such
a to the August 19th Mariners game against Houston. You also get to join Pepsi for a pregame party in the pen, a private fan party with Mariners second baseman Uncle D. Gordon before the game, all brought to you by Pepsi. You can learn more at 710sports.com/win, or the fourth caller to talk to Lydia, Ashley, and Howdy back there will win those tickets. We'll have another pair to give away. I'm sorry, it's four tickets, not pair. It's four.
Yep.
Four tickets. We'll have another four-pack to give away coming up in the 9 o'clock hour
wow.
as well. Salk, you'll love the level-up challenge. Yeah, yummy all in my tummy. I can't wait. And you guys made fun of what the Fox say. The Fox dominates level up on every level.
Level up.
Will you open up the phone lines?
They're already. Oh,
level
they're
up, level
they
up,
closed
level
them because okay, they already
good.
Got their winner.
Oh, they did.
Right?
Okay,
you guys
great.
Got your winner over
level
there?
Level up, level up.
Are you good?
Level
yeah, they're
up.
Working
Salt.
On it.
Yeah. John Morosi's next, for God's sakes. It's Brock and Salk. I am very calm.
Mike is really angry. He's as mad as he can be.